Some of you may remember them. They came to RBC Moms Connection a few years ago, so we're really excited to have them back. In fact, they were requested to come back, so I'm happy they obliged. David and Rebecca have four young kids, and they've gone on their own financial journey, which is what they're going to share with us today. Dave leads the financial ministry at their church, and then together they lead a few Financial Peace University courses several times a year, which we also offer at RBC. I know they're going to mention that. So I'm going to pray for them, and if you guys could get ready to give your attention to Dave and Rebecca, I appreciate it. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much again for this opportunity to gather, and we thank you for our speakers and just the way that you have put this topic on Dave and Rebecca's heart. And I just pray that you would be with them as they speak, Lord. Give them the words to share, and I pray you would open our hearts to hear only what you have for us. In Jesus' name, amen. So here's this. That one's on if you need a second one.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having us here today. This is something that we're excited to talk about. We've been on quite a journey with finances, and we like to share our story with other people, so hopefully we won't make the same mistakes. We have been married for 18 years. We have four kids. We have a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and our youngest two are here today. You can see them. I stay at home with our kids, and my husband works in IT. We live in Fairfax, Virginia. And I like sharing these principles at the beginning of the year. I know some of us are kind of motivated to start the new year and make goals, and sometimes it's nice to have a fresh start and just kind of reevaluate what's going well, what's not going well, how do we need to reprioritize this year. How many of you have made any kind of goals or resolutions this year? Some people do, some people don't. That's fine. Just to go over the agenda of what we're going to share this morning, I'm going to talk a little bit about our family and our story, and my husband's going to share about how we operate our personal finances, and then I'm going to talk about teaching kids about money and entitlement and our culture, and then we'll have a time for questions. So we were married in 2004. We were both still in college, and we had about 3 years of college. In our first 3 years of marriage, we were in college and working at the same time together. And even though we both grew up in Christian homes, we really were not taught any kind of basic financial principles. We weren't taught how to save money, how to budget, how to spend wisely, how to plan. And so then we get married as a 20 and 21-year-old, and we did not have any common goals, any common vision or purpose, and things started to get a little ugly. We had a motorcycle loan, a car loan, student loans. We were going out to eat with our friends all the time. We were going to the movies. We were just spending a lot of money. My husband would avoid the mailbox because he didn't want to open the bills. He didn't want to see what was there. And, we were in an apartment for that first year, and we just didn't really know what we were doing. Our peak credit card debt was probably $25,000, along with the other loans we had. And we were just not communicating with each other. We didn't have anything written down. We didn't have any plans. The next year, in 2005, we decided to buy a townhouse because that seemed like the wise thing to do. We had zero money down. It was the peak of the housing market in the last 20 years, so a very bad time to buy. We never recovered from that decision. It got worse from there. We felt a lot of pressure from friends to quit renting because everyone said, renting's a bad choice, it's a bad place to put your money. And we were really financially stressed. We were not on the same page. And we kind of regret giving in to outside pressures instead of taking the time to evaluate what was right for our family at that time. In 2009, so fast forward a few years, we were really sick of being in debt. We already had a one-year-old at that time. And we just had kind of kept these poor decisions and not tracking what we were spending, and it wasn't getting better, and we kind of just got sick and tired of living that way. We decided that we needed to take responsibility for our finances and eliminate debt. Being a mom and having student debt over my head was not a good feeling, just like thinking, how can I plan for his future if I haven't even paid for my past? We started changing the way we operated. We paid off our vehicles. We minimized grocery. We sold everything we could possibly think of in our house. We canceled cable. I started babysitting for other families to bring in a little extra. We finally learned to say no to ourselves, which is not fun, because it's a lot more fun to say yes. In 2011, we were introduced to Dave Ramsey's material. Has anyone ever heard of Dave Ramsey? So we took Financial Peace University, and we read his book, The Total Money Makeover, and that really dramatically changed the way that we operate. We switched to using the cash envelope system, and we've been doing that for 12 years, and we haven't looked back. And that has saved us thousands of dollars in the last over a decade. We've learned the joys of giving and what biblical stewardship is, and we're always reminding ourselves that this money has been entrusted to us. It's not something that we possess. It's been something that's been given to us, and always asking ourselves, what can we do to use this wisely and purposefully and intentionally instead of just letting money be spent without any care or plan? We paid off our mortgage on our townhouse about 6 years ago. The plan for this townhouse was to live in it for 5 to 7 years, have a few kids, and then buy a big home. That's not exactly how it played out. We stayed in the townhouse for 12 years, and we had 4 little kids in a 1,400 square foot townhouse, and I stayed home with them, and it was crowded, and we didn't really have a yard, and that was really hard. A lot of our friends were buying bigger homes and bigger yards, and that was hard for us to learn to be content with what we had and to realize that God had given us enough. We had enough. We needed to be content with what we had at that moment and not look around and be covetous. In Luke 12:15, Jesus says to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." In Philippians 4:11-13, it says, "Not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me." In 2017, we sold our townhouse and we moved into a single-family home. This was a very long-awaited goal of ours to finally make this move. We are now debt-free except for a 15-year mortgage, and we have 6 months emergency fund because we are a one-income family. We've taught the Financial Peace class over a dozen times, and I also teach a personal finance middle school class at our church. Our journey has had a lot of highs and lows, and we've learned a lot together, and God has seen us through it all. He's been very faithful to us. For both of us, our parents, pretty much the biggest conflict in their marriage was money. And I remember my mom, you know, hiding credit cards from my dad and hiding purchases from my dad. And we did not grow up with a good understanding of what it meant to be unified in marriage in this and to walk together through marriage in this. And we did not want to do the same thing in our marriage. We fight about a lot of stuff. Don't get me wrong. But we really try to be on the same page when it comes to money. Who's made a dumb financial mistake? Anyone, everyone. We're human, right? We're broken. We're needy. But you're not alone, and God gives us grace for a new tomorrow. We're really passionate about teaching this material because we made a lot of mistakes, and it's made a big difference in our lives to take charge of this and be responsible.
All right. Hi, my name is Dave. Rebecca tells the story really well, and even I was just rethinking all of that through as we went back. I hadn't heard it in a little while, so. But we struggled in a lot of ways, especially in the early years. I mean, Rebecca went through all of that. And, you know, today we have a role at our church, and I'm the treasurer there, and also we head up the personal finance ministry there. And I had an opportunity, I think about 8 years ago, to go down. I flew down to Dave Ramsey's office, and we took a coaching course there for a week. And so we do also counseling at our church for that. But so I think Rebecca asked, who's been through FPU? So not just heard about it, but who's actually been through it? Okay, that's good. It is being taught here on January 29th. So that's coming up in like, 9 days. So take a look at that if that's something you're interested in. So the first thing I want to kind of talk through, I know Rebecca, we're going to get back, and Rebecca's going to give us some tips on teaching the kids specifically. But I wanted to highlight that I think our kids learn more from us by watching us and being involved with how we're running our lives than just sort of, hey, on Mondays we're going to do this, or, you know, just implementing sort of a very practical thing. They're really watching us, and that's how they learn if we really think about it. I think, you know, if Rebecca and I weren't on the same page and we were just implementing a couple of things and our finances was a mess, I think our kids ultimately aren't going to learn as much than if we get our goals on the same page, we are transparent with our kids and communicate. I mean, as they're older, right? If you have younger kids, they're obviously age appropriate what you're going to share with them. But I think that's really important. So I really want to just focus on that for a minute. I think if they see us handling money well, looking for good deals, being frugal, using the cash envelope system, you know, not using credit cards or using credit cards, that's all things that they're observing. I know in the early days, or even still now, you know, Rebecca has a certain budget amount when she goes to the grocery store. And if the kids go with her, it's like, oh, well, we got to put this item back, right? Because, you know, they see that. They're watching those things. And as our kids have gotten older, our oldest is 14, you know, we involve them even in our vacation planning. Hey, guys, we have this much money this year to spend on our vacations. Do you guys want to go to the beach? Do you want to go see, you know, grandma up in Connecticut? You know, those kinds of things. And then they have some buy-in and they understand what we're working with and that it's not an infinite, oh, yeah, we're just going to go to Disney and we're going to do this and that. Like, it all has to balance, right? So I think they see that, and we even let them play a part in it. So, you know, my kids, we just shared with them, they're really into Dude Perfect. Has anyone heard of Dude Perfect? Okay. So if you have boys, they might be aware of them. So they're coming to Baltimore, and my kids have wanted to see them for years. So we went and bought tickets for them, but the tickets are kind of pricey. I mean, they're like $100 a person. I mean, they're kind of a lot. And so I told the kids, like, hey, are each of you willing to chip in $20 to go see Dude Perfect? Now, that's not a huge amount, right? It's not going to break their bank. But they're now vested in that decision to go see them. And yeah, it's only $20, but it involves them in this whole process, right? So those are the types of things I mean. Sorry, I think this keeps turning off. Let's see. Okay, so I just wanted to cover the Dave Ramsey baby steps for those who aren't familiar with them just really quickly. So step one is really saving up $1,000. Most of you probably already have that. And then step two is paying off all your debt except your mortgage. So that would be student loans, car loans. I was super excited at our table. Three different people said they pay cash for cars. So I was like, yes. So that's step two. That should be less than 2 years. So really, you want to try to find a plan that gets you completely out of debt in 2 years if that's where you are. And then step three is saving up 3 to 6 months of expenses. So we're a one-income family. We've got to add up the mortgage and the food and our basic needs, and that would be how much we need to have saved in an account. Four and five, you can kind of do at the same time. Investing, he says 15% goes into retirement, so you want to look at that. And then college, you and your spouse kind of have to talk through what your goal is, and we'll get to goals in a minute, but what your goal is to provide your kids with college. Do you want to pay half? Do you want to pay for the first 2 years? If they get good grades, you're going to pay for all of it. You got to talk that through and then go look up how much it costs, and let's make some assumptions on where they're going to school. So just as a practical thing, Rebecca and I said when our kids are born, we're going to put $6,000 in a 529 for each of them, and we're just going to see what grows. And so now they each have about 12. It's about doubled. You know, well, my 14-year-old, that's what I'm using. And so he can go to Nova for 2 years for free. I mean, we're using that money, and then we got to figure out what to do with the rest. But at least make a goal with what you want to do and at least start having that conversation, even if you're not saving for it now. And then step six is paying off the house. Most people can do this between 7 and 11 years. So that would be the time frame on that baby step that I would try to plan for. And then once you're at step seven, you're giving money away and probably going on some good vacations. So anyways, I just wanted to set that out there just to sort of outline a quick plan for you and your spouse. Now, in all the coaching and things we've done, there's two things that I like to get parents talking about or spouses talking about. One is your goals. So I've got this page. It's not that big, but go home, you fill it out separate from your husband, and then give it to him to fill out. And then go on a date night or something and talk about it. Because you might have completely different things and not necessarily know it. And those ultimately are going down and flowing down into your day-to-day decisions. If I'm like, hey, Rebecca, I think we should sell your car. Why am I saying that? Because there's something on my list here, right? Motorcycle. I sold my motorcycle when we were getting out of debt, so I don't have a motorcycle. You know, I have something on this sheet that I've not communicated to her, right? So it's going to start affecting your thing. So getting on the same page here is critical. And then I gave you another worksheet. It's the blue one. It kind of has like a little quiz. That's to sort of understand. You should take that quiz and then let your husband take that quiz. And understand who is the nerd and who is the free spirit. And one of you is also probably a saver and one of you is a spender. So I'm kind of a nerd spender. That's kind of my bent. So I like to spend money, but I'm also like tracking it all. And so each person's a little different. And just knowing who your spouse is will help. Like if your spouse is a free spirit and you come there as a nerd and you're like, yeah, let's talk about the budget for 2 hours. They're going to be like, wait, what? You got me for like 5 minutes, right? So you know, and you've got to find the granularity that you guys need to talk to. You know, one of you can do the work, but you just want to make sure you find that out between yourself so you're working together well. Okay, a couple more things, and then I'm going to, yeah, there's the quiz. So communicate, I've talked about that. Go look at your historical spending. I think that's critical with trying to understand where you're currently spending all your time. There's a good verse, Matthew 6:21 says, for where your treasure is, your heart will be also. When we got married and I did this, we were spending like $500 or $600 going out to friends with restaurants. That was like our thing, right? And so you'll kind of learn about yourself if you haven't been tracking it too closely. Two practical things that we use is Every Dollar. That's Dave Ramsey's budgeting app. I find it pretty good. It connects up to your bank. And then we use the Good Budget app to track our cash spending that Rebecca mentioned not too long ago. So we are still doing cash today for 5 categories: household, grocery, entertainment, dining. Yeah, those 4, yeah. All right. I think we talked a little about being content and making sacrifices. Once you have your goals listed out, like if our goal in the early years was getting out of that townhome, when we came to, hey, are we going to upgrade the kitchen? Are we going to do this? Are we going to spend any money? We both were on the same page with top priority, saving money to get out of this house. And so that aligned us on every decision we made, which was really critical. Let's see. I think distinguishing needs versus wants is pretty huge. If Rebecca and I don't do that well, our kids aren't going to do that well. So involving them in that process and helping them at least be transparent with them, because our kids will often be like, hey, I want to get this. And it's like, okay, is that a need or a want? Do you have the money? And walking them through that whole thing really helps them kind of get a grasp on that, which I would say a lot of people don't always have a grasp of that today, especially in our area. I mean, we live in a fairly affluent area, and so we can all afford a lot of things. All right, let's see. The last thing I wanted to say, actually the second last thing, is just that Philippians 4:19 says, and my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory of Jesus Christ. And we really have to ask ourselves if we believe that, because I kind of wrote this quote here. It says, I should ask myself whether I believe that God knows my needs best. Debt is spending money I don't have, so do I really believe that God's given me everything I need? And so just really encouraging you to see if you can be content without going into debt would be my challenge. We talked about goals. Here are the 4 categories for cash envelopes. We definitely still do this today, and we track it in our app, and Rebecca carries the cash. And we've definitely felt that that really helps us stick to our budget. The second thing that I'd say here, the personal spending money was huge for us. So I grew up with 6 brothers. You know, I didn't, I learned a lot when I got married, is all I'll say. And, you know, this spending money gives each of you a little freedom when you're running, say, a pretty tight budget on a lot of other things. You have some freedom. I can go out with the guys and grab a beer, or, you know, you can do different things, right? And so this spending money is sort of a way you can give yourself some breathing room if you've got some really tight budget goals that you're trying to hit. We talked a bit about the 529. The last practical tip I'll leave you with for the kids is when our kids were born, anyone's kids receive money and they're like less than a year old. We took all of the money that they received from like age 0 to at least 7 or 8. And then after that, it would be a negotiation, right? The kids would be like, no, Dad, I want to get this. I just got $50 from Grandpa. And I'm like, so then it would be a negotiation, like, well, how much are you going to save and how much are you going to spend? But we saved all of that money. And I think my oldest son has like over $3,000 just in the money we saved for like gifts, which wasn't even stuff I put in there, right? So that was a practical tip that I'll leave you with. And then I will give it back to Rebecca to...
So like we mentioned before, you know, we didn't want to pass on the same mistakes that we had grown up with to our kids. Dave Ramsey has a great teaching tool. It's back on the table back there. There's a lot of resources back there, so feel free to browse afterwards. It's called the Financial Peace Junior Kit. It has a dry erase chore chart, activity books, and 3 envelopes for dividing earned money. We don't give our kids an allowance. We call it a commission, because if they don't do the chores, they don't get paid. If they do the chores, they do get paid. There are 3 categories for their earned money. It's give, save, and spend. So we give them about dollar amount half of what their age is. So my 14-year-old son is getting $7 a week. My 12-year-old daughter is getting $6. Owen, my 10-year-old, is getting $5. And Michaela, who's 7, is getting $3. So we do like maybe a dollar raise a year, something like that. And we try to reevaluate their chore list about every 6 months based on their developmental abilities, just their maturity and handling, you know, hot things or whatever. So we pay on Monday, but obviously that could be, you know, whatever works for you. We kind of have our week run as Monday to Sunday with chores, and then we pay them on Monday. We try to make it consistent, but there are times that we don't pay them until the next week. But that's okay, because we have a printed chart. It's saved there. Even if we're late in paying them, we have at least it written down, so we can get that done later. I find that it's can be helpful for little kids to have like quarters or change, kind of just like a very physical experience for them. Obviously, if you have younger siblings in the house and that's a chokeable item, you know, be careful with that. Maybe keep it out of reach. And when they get a little bit older, you can do dollar bills. And when you have like these jars or these envelopes and you pay them in dollar bills, it can be really gratifying for them to kind of see that grow. And, you know, if they're saving for a certain thing, to see those categories grow, that can be really fun for them. We have specific chores that our kids do for money, and then specific chores that they do just because they're a part of our family. And that's going to look different for every family. Maybe you pay them to take out the trash, but they have to brush their hair and get dressed, or whatever. It can be different for everyone. I'm considering putting showering on there for my kids as they get a little bit older, because it's a negotiation every other day of, you really need to shower today. Then maybe that would motivate them a little bit more. Yeah, so Crystal Payne at Money Saving Mom has a lot of really great ideas. It's at the end of the handout we gave you. Just a lot of good age-appropriate chores for different ages. You know, things that a toddler can do. They can pick up their toys. They can take their plate to the sink. They can, you know, take a Clorox wipes and wipe down a wall or wipe down a table, right? There's really simple things that little kids can do that we can ask them to help to do as part of our family, as part of our family unit. For a 4 or 5-year-old, it might be putting away their laundry. And that might mean opening the drawer and checking it in. But you know what? That's a win in my book, because it's something that they can do independently on their own that I'm not doing. They could sweep or vacuum. They could pick up their room. They could empty the dishwasher. Maybe not the glass things, but maybe they could do the plastic plates. They can do the silverware. For a 7 or 8-year-old, it might be things like making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or folding their laundry or wiping on the table or taking out the trash. So in these 3 categories, there's a lot of ideas on Pinterest for different containers you can do or label or whatever. You don't have to buy anything to do this. There's a lot of ideas already out there that you can look at. For the give category, we would have them take that giving, what they get for giving, they put in their giving from their money, we would have them take that to church on Sunday and put that in the tithing offering basket. And I think that's a really good physical reminder to them of this money has been given to you by God, and we want to joyfully give that back. And it's just a reminder, because sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of hesitation. I don't want to put this, you know, God gave this to us. It's just such a good reminder of we don't really own this. We're just being entrusted with this for a temporary time. The spend category would be for small items, something from the Dollar Tree, from Walmart, a food item at the grocery store that mom is not going to pay for, Fruit Loops or something. So my kids know that if they go grocery shopping with me, you better bring some money because there's going to be things that they want to buy that I'm just not going to have in my purchase that week. And it's fun for them to bring, you know, a couple dollars and buy something. And I do have them do their own transaction with the cashier because it's a great opportunity for them to interact with an adult and to pay them appropriately and get the change and the receipt. And it, you know, helps them feel like a big kid. And it's always fun for them to do that. We really don't buy toys for them except for at birthdays and Christmas, so their save category would be for something big. Maybe they want a Wii system. Maybe they want a bike. Maybe they want a new scooter or something like that. So that would be more like over time saving up for a really big item that mom and dad are not going to be paying for. And I found with our kids that saving really teaches them patience and perseverance. It teaches them to be consistent in small amounts over time. And I think that that's something that's kind of lost in our culture with everything being so fast-paced. When my son Desmond was 4, he really wanted to save up for a bike. And so he saved for 6 months. And we went to Salvation Army, went to a thrift store, and he had saved up $25. And I'll never forget him, like, pulling out nickels and dimes and dollars. I felt so bad for the cashier. It took forever. But he felt so proud of himself when he had done that. Because he had been saving and he knew what he wanted. And of course, he didn't have enough for tax. So I covered that for him because I was going to give him grace. But, you know, those kind of experiences are so great for the kids to kind of initiate on their own instead of having you driving everything for them, to have them take some responsibility. My daughter, when she was 6, wanted to save up for an Our Generation doll at Target. You know, they're $30. And she can sometimes get sidelined because she'll see something else. You know, we're out shopping and she sees this necklace and she's like, I want this necklace for $10. I'm like, sweetie, remember you're saving for that doll. And so just having those conversations of opportunity cost, like money is not endless. You can't just spend it everywhere. It will run out eventually, but you can spend it here or you can spend it here, but you have to make that choice and you have to say no to yourself sometimes, which is not fun. There's other things that they can do, they know, besides just the chores in our family to make money. Our kids have cats sitted for other people, they've babysat, they've done yard work for neighbors. There's a handicraft fair that we're a part of that they always make their own little handmade ornaments or sugar scrubs or whatever. And that's a great opportunity for them, too, to interact with adults and have conversations about their product and to understand cost and understand if they'll make any money. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And that's a great lesson for them to experience. And my kids know that I'm always willing to give them extra chores for money. So whether it's mopping or doing yard work, because we have a big yard or whatever, they know that they can come to me and, sure, I'll give you a dollar or two for a quick chore if you want to make a little extra money. My son also had a little donut delivery business for a couple years. He would go to Krispy Kreme on Saturday mornings with his dad, and they would deliver donuts in the neighborhood so people could order them ahead of time online. And that was like a really fun thing for him to do, and it made everyone else happy because no one wants to get up early on a Saturday morning. But that was just a fun thing for him to do with his dad to make a little bit of money, especially during COVID. So for Christmas time, we usually encourage our kids to get, you know, a little envelope or wallet with their money, and we go out, and it might be Walmart, or it might be like a $5 restaurant gift card to Chick-fil-A or something like that. But we encourage them to spend money on each other and to kind of, you know, think of what would my sister like, what would daddy like for Christmas. And I know it is so hard at Christmas time to get the focus off of the kids because everyone's asking them, what did you ask Santa for? What did you get for Christmas? Everyone's focusing on them, right? And so it's so hard to kind of, you know, pull them back from that and say, hey, how can we bless someone else at Christmas and try to get that focus off of them? But I think it's so helpful for them, and for them to discover the joy of giving is amazing. It's amazing to give, right? I don't know about you, but for me, I find it way more fun to give gifts at Christmas than receive. It's just, you know, kind of bringing them along that process and teaching them, right? That's part of growing. So the other thing I was going to share is I'm kind of a minimalist. I don't really like a lot of stuff around my house, which is great for saving money, right? Because if you don't need stuff, you don't buy stuff. But that doesn't always work when you have grandparents or relatives in your life. And so we've learned to be specific with their wants or needs, asking for consumable gifts, asking for experience gifts. We have an Amazon wish list for each of our kids that we can direct relatives to. So that's a little bit more specific and intentional, not just bringing in lots of extra toys into our house. And we found that to be really helpful, and I think that it was really hard for us in the beginning to have those boundaries with our parents and just have that kind of awkward conversation of like, you know, when we were living in our townhouse, I'm like, Mom, please don't buy me any more noisy toys. I cannot handle the noise. I will take the batteries out. I can't handle it, you know. So some of those noisy toys went to live at Grandma's house because I could not handle that. Like I said before, our culture is really fast-paced, and we are used to instant gratification. So some of the things that I do to try to teach our kids about patience is if we order something on Amazon, you know, they want to buy something on Amazon, I always push it out to the furthest shipping option. It's just a simple thing. But I'm like, I don't want them to grow up thinking that they can have something whenever they want it. I just think that's a really dangerous mentality. I remember as a kid, and this is going to date me, but I remember as a kid, my grandmother would say, okay, you could have $30 to spend in the Sears catalog. That is how old I am. And we had the Sears catalog, and my sister and I would go through, we'd pore over it, we'd fold down corners, we would circle things, and we got to pick one thing. And then you waited like 3 weeks for it to come, you know? And like, our kids are not getting that experience at all. And I'm like, what can I do to just delay that gratification, that pleasure, just a little bit, just to teach them a little bit more about patience? I think it's also teaching them to be a wise consumer because there's so many times we want to impulse spend, right? And if you just threw that thing in your Amazon cart and said, I'm going to sleep on it a few nights, you might not want it in a few days, right? And so just teaching them, let's just hold off. Let's just wait a little bit. Let's see if we really want it. I was just at Michael's with my son this week, and, you know, the whole end, I love Michael's. I'm a crafty person. It's great. But the whole end aisle is stickers and stuffed animals and candy and goldfish and soda, right? And I just said to him, why is that there? And he said, because they're selling it to kids. And I'm like, that's exactly right. You know, just pointing out things of they're marketing to you, they're studying you, and that is why that stuff is there. And we don't need to buy that. That's not why we came here. And just kind of, I majored in psychology, so I'm always really fascinated with how marketing, marketers, you know, get into our brains and study our behavior. And I try to, you know, point that out to my kids. Like if we see a commercial on TV, I always stop and I say, what are they selling you? What are they telling you? Your life will be better. Like what's the message here? You know, just trying to get them to get outside of their own heads and realize I'm being marketed to. Like someone is trying to sell me something. And what is that? Instead of just buying the idea that I truly will be happier if I have this item. Because is that really true? It's not. You'll be the same person you were before and after the purchase, right? One thing that I have found that can help us to get outside of our own little bubble is my sister is a missionary in West Africa, and she's raising 5 kids there. And their childhood is very different than my children's childhood. And we FaceTime a lot, and it's always a really good reminder to me of just the things that matter. Our daily lives in a lot of ways look the same, but in a lot of ways they're very different. She lives in kind of a third world culture, and so just basic needs like cooking and grocery shopping and things like that are very different. And I know sometimes it can be hard to kind of get out of our heads and realize, wow, we're in like the top 1% of the whole world when it comes to material possessions, right? And understanding and kind of exposing our kids in an appropriate way, there are other people living in different ways around the world. And how can we learn more about that? Maybe for you, that's inviting a missionary family into your home and asking them to tell stories about the culture they're living in. Maybe it's sponsoring a child with World Vision or something like that. Maybe it's watching a documentary together about another culture. Maybe it's volunteering in a soup kitchen. Or, hey, let's go to the grocery store and we're going to drop items off at a food pantry. Or we're going to buy some baby items at Walmart and drop them off at a pregnancy help center. These are all really tangible, physical ways that you can bring your kid along with you and kind of just expose them to another world than the world that they're used to and get them thinking about, wow, like God is giving me so much, and just thinking about what can I be grateful for in this situation instead of always wanting the next thing. because that's what's being marketed to them. That's what's being promoted to them. That's what they're hearing from their friends is always the next thing, right? In 1 Timothy 6:6-8, it says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and we cannot take anything out of it. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content." Stuff does not equal happiness. Stuff can be a lot of fun. Vacation can be a lot of fun. You can do a lot of things with money, right? But that does not equal true happiness and peace in your heart. That will do nothing for you. To me, the most important thing in my life is my relationship with God. And if that is not good, if that is not right, it doesn't matter whatever physical experiences you have, it's not going to change that. As my kids get older, you know, as they become teenagers, there's a lot of things their friends have that they don't have. And it's always just a good conversation with them of, you know, every family is different. We have our own family culture and we have our own family boundaries, and that's okay. And let's look at the things that you do have and let's be grateful for that. This is a book that I love by Kristen Welch. It's called Raising Grateful Kids in an Entitled World. And I have a couple copies back there if you want to look at it. I just wanted to read one quote to you that I find really compelling. "The only thing a child is really entitled to is his parents' love. Not to keep up with the Joneses, not a brand new bike or an iPad, just love. Every child deserves to be loved by his or her parents. If a child has your unconditional love, he is the greatest asset in the world. If we as parents can realize that it's love that our children need most and not things, we will stop trying to buy our children's happiness with possessions." I'm guilty of that as well. You know, being really busy, I feel guilty and I feel like I want to, we should go do something fun. I should spend money, right? And it's just such a reminder to me that my kids are not going to remember the things that I bought for them. They're going to remember the time I spent with them and my presence with them and the joy that we experienced together. I don't remember anything my parents bought for me. I remember the times we went on field trips. I remember the times we went to the beach together. And I remember my dad reading to me. That's what matters long term. And I think it's hard to remember that sometimes in this culture. It's so, you know, stuff focused. It can be tricky. In Hebrews 13:5, it says, "Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." One of my favorite books for little kids is The Tortoise and the Hare. It's a really simple story, but the reason why I love it is because it's all about consistency and perseverance and just one step at a time. And I probably say to my kids every single day, "How do you eat an elephant?" And they know, one bite at a time, right? Just kind of teaching them, it's just these little steps in life. It's not necessarily these big gestures we have to make or these grand sacrifices, but just little steps and being consistent with what God has given us. And I think in addition to the goal sheet that we handed out, I think it also can be really helpful to think about, what are your goals for your child? What do you want them to look like at 18? You know, for me, I want my kids to love God. I want them to be givers. I want them to be faithful and hard workers. I want them to put other people before themselves, you know? And so just thinking, what are steps I can take to get there? What are things that we can do? Obviously, praying for them. We can't control the outcome of our children at all, but praying for them and being intentional with them. One thing that I find, and I really still struggle with a lot, is just complaining continuously. And I know it's really bad when I hear my kids doing it a lot, because then I'm like, I must be complaining a lot because they're complaining a lot and they're mimicking what they're hearing. And that's something, you know, we're all a work in progress. That's something that I am, for 2023, really trying to focus on more, is me not complaining about the physical circumstances around me, because they're listening to that and that's affecting them, right? I don't want anyone to leave here feeling, oh, we're not doing that. Oh, we're not doing this enough. I want you to feel instead like encouraged and empowered about one small step that you can take to change this year. What's one thing that you can do in your life? I think that there's grace for wherever anyone is in this journey. Sometimes we forget the chores. It's been a busy day. Sometimes we forget to pay them. Sometimes we forget to set up the automatic fish feeder and we come home from vacation and the fish is dead. That happens. You know, it's real life. But what do? Do we just give up? No, we get back up and we keep going, right? If you're training for a race and you went out on one run and you said, oh, that's not happening, that was a disaster, right? I'm not going to run the race. That's not how we train, right? If you tried to potty train your child and you did it for 1 hour and they wet three times, are you going to just throw in the towel and say, no, we're not potty training. This isn't working out, right? It's all about the consistency in the long term. I think another thing that can be really, really helpful is finding other people who are like-minded to you, finding a frugal friend, finding someone who has similar life goals as you. It can be really discouraging when it seems like everyone around you is just spending endlessly and you kind of are on a tight budget or you're saving for something and it just feels like your life is so restricted and everyone else has so much freedom. It can be really encouraging to have someone else that you can walk through life together and kind of encourage each other with ways that you're saving. I think also it's really important to have boundaries, especially with family, and to be able to say no to things. We've had to do that. Just saying, you know, we're not going to spend money on that right now. And it's not that we didn't have the money, but it's that we've chosen that that's not our priority. A couple of resources I just wanted to mention is the Financial Peace University class, which we referenced earlier. I love this book, and I think it's phenomenal. It has some great ideas about chores and family culture, family mottos, family agreements with teens. Jessica Fisher at Good Cheap Eats blog and on Instagram is a great person that I follow. She has a lot of grocery tips. Making Frugal Fun is also on Instagram. That's also really fun. You can find so many people on Pinterest and Instagram. Just, you know, lots of ideas for how to, you know, cut different spending or save money. And I think that that can be really encouraging instead of following a lot of people who are spending a lot of money. That can be kind of discouraging at times. So just finding people in your life who are encouraging you is huge, I think. You can wrap up.
Great. So I think we're doing okay on time. We wanted to have some questions. I just also wanted to just mention the FPU class. It's not just if you're struggling with money. We teach this. We've taught the class at least 12 times. I don't know the exact number. And we do these talks and we do a bunch of other things. You know, even before this talk, we were just talking about a couple things we could improve. So it's a journey. It's not that anyone's arrived or anything like that. So we're still practicing some of this stuff. And so don't look at FPU as like, oh, if I'm going to go, it's because I need help. Go because you want to learn and just get better with money in general. And then take your spouse. So you definitely have to go with your spouse. That is highly recommended. If you have older kids, drag them along too. Come find me afterwards if you're interested in seriously taking FPU. I might be able to do something for you. So just come talk to me. All right, so let's open to questions. We also do have a table, just so I don't forget. There's a table in the back. Stop by. We have a lot of resources. And we'll also send out some notes or PowerPoint through Lindsay. I know some of the slides were small there at the end with resources. But okay, questions.
Real quick, Dave, when you
yes.
ask the question, can you repeat it?
Yes, I will. Sure.
And also, like youth sports, what does your family do?
Yeah. Okay, so the two questions just for the video were what we spend on groceries and how we do or plan for youth sports. So the grocery question is something we were just talking about. So Rebecca can share where we've been and what our history has been and maybe where we're going.
So last night I was almost in tears because inflation has really hit my budget very hard. And paying so much money for eggs right now, I could cry in the grocery store. And I don't even do organic or anything, so I'm just paying, you know, whatever, the minimum. But we were spending $1,000 on grocery and household historically. Now we're going to move that up to $1,300. But so that would include, like, paper products, groceries, you know, Tylenol, things like that.
Great. And then the sports question, was that sort of from a finance perspective or just in general?
Yeah, just
okay.
Like,
yes. Yeah, so our kids do sports, soccer. I guess we're not in competitive swim, but they take swim classes. So there's different activities like that we're in. One thing that I've learned to do is Dave Ramsey will teach something called a sinking fund. And I have basically an online savings account, and I'm able to open up. I actually have multiple of them. They're all with, I think it's Capital One or whatever. and I can give each one a nickname. So what I'll do is look at the year and say, hey, if we do 3 swim classes, everyone does soccer, and maybe you put a little extra in there for something else you're not planned on, then every month we'll just put $100 or $200 or whatever that budgeted amount in that account, so it's kind of accruing, so that ideally when those bills come up, I can cover them. So that's kind of how I manage kind of these irregular things with the kids.
I would just add, they do play rec, not competitive, so it usually is a little cheaper, and we always do just very small local community. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you are in travel or anything else, then that's thousands of dollars, so you've got to definitely budget for that. We don't quite spend that kind of money on that, but yeah, other questions? Yes.
This one? Oh, the tortoise? The tortoise and the hare. The hare, like a rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have it at the table. The question was just what the name of that book was. Here, I think you can take this one. All right, other questions?
I have 2 questions. I'm not super familiar with the cash envelope. Kind of wondering if you can describe that a little bit.
Yeah.
And my second question is, you have the goal that you, me, and my husband are supposed to do respectively. Are these financial goals? Are they life goals? Are they, what kind of goals do you have?
I mean, I would say they're kind of both, because if you want to take a vacation or someone wants to go to school, or you want to buy a bigger house, or you want to buy a car, those are all related to money, right? So I would say the majority of your goals are going to have finance in it in some way. Maybe, it's something that's not related to that, but it's kind of intertwined. I would just write down whatever comes in your head, whatever, and then you can kind of tease apart, well, how much money is that exactly? And kind of put a, dollar sum to that.
Yeah, and I would agree. It could even be, I've seen in coaching, it'll be, maybe the wife is thinking like, hey, I want to come home in 3 years when we have our baby, or I'm going to, it can be non kind of monetary things, but I think when you trace back through them, they'll have some implication that you may have to plan for. Mm-hmm. Was there a second question that we missed? Cash envelopes. I don't know if you want to get yours, but basically once a month I go to the bank, I take out the cash for the 4 categories. It's grocery, household, entertainment, and dining. And so basically I take out, now it's going to be close to $1,500 or whatever that amount is for the month, and then we load that in 4 different envelopes that Rebecca carries. And basically she'll spend that, and she marks it down when she spends it in her app, so I can always look, if I'm at the store and I don't have the envelopes, I can see how much cash we have in those envelopes, and I could just use my debit card, and then I can come home and reconcile that. So that's how that would actually happen. But for the most part, those 4 categories are the only things we do in cash, and that she primarily has ownership or stewardship of the spending of those. Does that make sense?
And that is because doing that, I feel like there's a statistic there, you are saving.
Yeah, so basically, I don't think I mentioned this, but there's a study that was done, actually a number of studies, one by MIT, one by McDonald's, and a couple of others that Dave Ramsey will reference. And basically, during these focus group studies, they'll send people into different stores with cash or credit. And the McDonald's focus group came back, I think, with spending on credit, you tended to spend 73% more money when you're going down the menu, right? Whereas if I walk in with my cash, I'm like, where's that dollar menu? Now that probably dates me too, right? I don't think there's a dollar menu. I haven't been in there in a while. But anyways, and then MIT also did a study that basically when you spend with credit, the pain centers of your brain don't actually fire like on an MRI machine. Whereas by when I pull my cash out, I'm like, it's like active. And so there's this notion that some of us believe that helps us. So anyways.
I think there's also an aspect of when the money's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're, when you're swiping with a credit card, you can go over and, yeah. Oh, well, I went over the budget. But with cash, that's it. It's done.
I think it makes it super transparent to the kids. So even if you didn't buy any of the studies that I just pitched, I think the kids looking over your shoulder at the grocery store, if they're with you, now some of you might want to go without them and I wouldn't blame you, but they're looking, when they're like, hey, I want to get the Fruit Loops, and Rebecca's like, really sorry guys, today we can't, we don't have, look, there's no money here, or I got to save so much, then they whip out their cash, it feels like they're learning, I think, a bit more. So there's a question over here. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I would say, you don't have to subscribe to chores or commissions, and we certainly have our kids do chores because they're just part of the family. Like, you know, if I tell them to go do something that isn't on the chore chart and they're like, is that a dollar? I'm like, that ain't a dollar. Okay, that's like, you know, you got to go do that, right? So I think the idea or the principle we're trying to teach, which you don't necessarily have to have commissions to do, is we want to have some amount of money in the kids' control, whether they've earned it or not. And we want to be very active in coaching them on how to spend it, how to save it, and making them exercise those different things so that later in life when my 14-year-old, if I hadn't taught him anything and he's like 14 or 15, he's going to have his own paradigm, whereas if I've been coaching him through his, like, he ran the donut business for a little while, and he was making, like, really good money. So that wouldn't have been commissions, right? So you could pick something like that and help them with that. And then when they get that money, coach them on that money is what I would suggest. That's a great question, though. Yes. Yes.
Like your 10%, right. Maybe up your giving after you do all other.
Yeah, that's true. So the question, just for, I think it's being recorded, is do you start giving all the way through the baby steps? And that's true. Yeah. I should have clarified that. The baby steps, I think Dave Ramsey teaches 10% right. All the way through, even from baby step one.
Right.
And then the last, which is simplified to give, is like, hey, we don't have a mortgage.
Right.
Giving is a ton of fun. God calls us to give. Let's go bless people. Yeah.
So my next question is, I'm wondering if you can weigh in on a little debate.
Sure.
We're having at home. It's not really a pressing debate because we're not there yet. But as far as paying off the house, right now it's sort of in the realm of our goals for the future. But we bought in 2021 when the interest rates were like super low, bottom, and my husband, who loves playing the stock market, but he's pretty good at it. Like he's learned over the, he's made some mistakes, but he's pretty good at investing and all of that. His argument is we can make more rather than paying off the house as one of our like kind of 10-year goals or whatever. We can actually make more for just paying mortgage and investing the rest in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that depends on how the market's doing, but so far he's been doing pretty well.
There's basically schools of thought that would support both.
Okay.
I think when paying off our townhouse was very cool for the year we lived there mortgage free. And I kind of think when we're to that point with our single family home, which isn't too far off, I think it's going to enable us to do a lot of things, including invest, which we're investing now. But, you know, I think if you were going to subscribe to that, that methodology,
right.
I would make sure that you're setting your savings goal as aggressive as you would for paying off the house.
Okay.
So if you told me, hey, our goal is to pay off the house in 7 or 9 years or 10 years or whatever you wanted to pick, I would say that brokerage account that he's doing investing in needs to hit that number at that time, whatever that is. And that doesn't mean him investing more risky. That means you guys putting more money in that account. And then the only other thing I would caution is, depending on the trading he's doing and track record and everything like that, I would just make sure you both understand the risk as that account builds, right? If that account's going to be like $300,000 and I'm going to, you know, throw it all in on Apple or something, just be careful, right?
He's a huge stock market.
Yeah. I mean, I do a lot too myself, but anyways. Anyways, is that helpful?
Yes, that is helpful.
Yes.
I just write it on the side of my list, and I just tally it roughly as I'm going, so I pretty much can get the total within a couple dollars when I get up to the register. Yeah.
Just like doing those separate budgets in general, how do you guys keep it all organized?
Keep the cash organized? Or keep the what we spend in the month?
Your budget, and then, keeping...
So the way... Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So we use Every Dollar, which is Dave Ramsey's app, and it connects to our bank account. So I'm basically we have a built budget in there, and every transaction goes against, our budget. So I'm tracking it sort of at a macro level. But part of the reason the cash is so advantageous, at least from my nerd opinion, because I'm always dragging all these transactions, I don't have to drag any of the Walmart transactions or the grocery transactions. That's like, 30 transactions, it could be a lot of transactions, right? So all of that is in the cash. So when I take that cash out at the beginning of the month and I put it in the envelopes, I don't really care how it's spent. Does that make sense? So there's some freedom in that. Does that answer
your question?
But then
I'm keeping track of it in the Good Budget app. So
yeah.
I have four categories in there, and every time I spend money, I'm marking it so I can see how much I have left at the end of the month. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, I know. I grocery shop. I homeschool, so I have had all my kids with me every time I grocery shop. It's quite a fun experience. Now they're old enough, I can leave them at home, thank God. But yes, it can be a lot. And yeah, maybe you can try it on a weekend or something, when your husband's home, so it's not as overwhelming.
All right. Next.
Tying into that, so if you are at Target and you have groceries and then you have mm-hmm.
I did initially. Now it bleeds over more, household and grocery. But initially I did. I would have like four transactions. Like this was gift and this was grocery and this was... But that was because, we were trying to pay off our townhouse and we were super, super micro-focused on that. And that just really helped me to just have it. But maybe you're in a point where you can be a lot more flexible and you can just, my sister-in-law she does the cash envelope system too, and she has her grocery and household together. And it's just one big fund, and she just pulls from that. And that works for her. For me, I like to have it a little bit separate, but it kind of just depends on your personality and how type A you want to be about it.
And I would also say, as you practice, like when we first started, when we came like 5 years ago, I think, I don't know what our grocery budget would have been. It would have been like $400 or $500 plus household. But anyways, we were really micro-focused on like all of the details, right? Now it's a little bit more, you can relax a couple of things once you understand where everything's going and you've built some good habits, right? So, if some money comes from household to pay for some extra groceries because we had like four people over, I don't care. We've already talked about it. We're in the budget. We're good. So you can kind of relax a couple of those rules after you've been doing it a little while. Mm-hmm. I thought I saw some questions. Yes.
How did you initially figure out your budget? Like how much groceries are going to be here for the month and stuff like that?
I think it's a combination of looking at what you have been spending.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then it's scrutinizing every, what are we paying for cell phones? Do we really need to pay $55 for each cell phone we have? Do we need a new iPhone every 2 years? So you're scrutinizing these different categories. Cable, we cut cable when we're in a townhome. Rebecca was like, we need to get out of here as fast as we can, and we do not mm-hmm. need cable. So, you got to talk about that stuff as a family, mm-hmm. right? You can't go home and be like, yeah, we saw the talk today, and we're cutting cable, and it's like, Super Bowl's like next month, right?
Right.
It's not going to go over
right.
well. Okay?
Or we're selling your truck.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
going to work. Don't try that.
Rebecca didn't come to me and say, hey, we should sell your motorcycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got mm-hmm. on board with the goals, and then we had a discussion. It was like, yeah, our top goal is getting out of the town home, and I didn't realize the motorcycle was worth like $3,000 or $4,000, even though it was like 10 years old. So we sold it, and we had kids. It's like, they were young. I couldn't put them on the, it wasn't economical. So getting on the same page is helpful. thought there was something else I was going
to
say.
I would say I think it's going to take a few months to just kind of figure it out. You just got to pick a number
and
go with it. And then you're going to figure out, oh, this was way too tight. Or, you know, we actually had extra at the end of the month. I think we could do a little less.
And I think the why when you do the goals is going to motivate you to see how much you can cut. Because then what comes in is, okay, what are our goals and what do we need to hit them? When we were in the townhome, it was like, we got to get this thing paid off. So then we were challenging every category and trying to get as much down as possible to put it aside. Yes?
How many weeks is the financial piece
university? I believe there's a couple different versions. I think it's down to 7, if I'm not mistaken. It was 9, and I think it got down to 7.
She said it's 9 here.
It's 9.
It might be 9.
Yep. Yeah. But it's totally worth it. I was going to
say there's also virtual options, although I personally think in person is better just because you have more of like a coaching relationship, but you can do it virtually.
Yeah. Did y'all watch him the other night?
Watch what? No,
Native
I didn't. 11. I didn't. I watch him on the radio sometimes or on his video, whatever channel, but he's entertaining if you haven't listened to him. Oh, yes.
What do you guys do for gifts? That's what gifts are like. Kids' birthday parties. I feel like we're at a kid's birthday party every week. Or, friends.
So we both come from two very large families that do gifts. That's a great question. So Rebecca's one of 11, and I'm one of 7. Mm-hmm. And almost all of our siblings are married. Not all of them, but most of them are. Mm-hmm. And some of them have kids. So this was a challenge we had early on in our marriage. And what we have evolved to is basically, we talked about the sinking fund. Someone over here asked about that. We basically, at the beginning of the year, decide to put how much money, we tallied it up. In the early days, it was like, how many weddings do we think we're going to go to? How many birthdays? We listed out everyone in our family. And we had to sit there and say, everyone's getting a $15 gift or a $10 gift in the early days. Now it can be a little bit more. But basically, we culminate or accumulate that up to I think it's like over $4,000. I mean, we have a lot of people to get gifts for, and that also includes our kids at Christmas. So we don't get to Thanksgiving and be like, oh man, we need $1,000 for the kids or something like that, right? So we every month we save in an account till the end of the, when we use it. And actually for that, we actually ended up creating, we have a whole separate checking account just for gifts. Mm-hmm. So that we have a separate debit card tied to that gift account. Mm-hmm. So Rebecca carries that and does most of the gift shopping. And when she's out for a gift, it's a separate swipe. And the money's there. And I don't have to budget it or think about it. And
then we keep it tracked in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's right. So that at the end of the year, we can look back and say, hey, we came in under or over. Or next year, we need to adjust. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, yeah. Okay. Sure, no problem.
Five minutes. It's not much. We've been doing this for 12 years. So.
Yeah, in the beginning, it was.
In the beginning, we weren't spending very much money, so it didn't take that much time. The app is so easy. I literally get back in my car at the grocery store and I enter it. It's 20 seconds. I mean, it's that fast, right? You're just typing in what you spent. I do it as soon as I get back in the car. I don't even get home. I'm like, write it down, throw away the receipt, right? Because I don't want to keep all that stuff.
And I would say maybe an hour a week for me just doing updating budgets, paying bills, doing all that stuff.
Like, I opened this checking to do this,
right.
All that's automated, though.
It's all automatic.
I get paid on some day of the month, and all of the money gets automatically sucked into all the accounts.
So he's not transferring that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, paycheck comes in and it all leaves.
All right, we will be at the table for more questions. I don't want to go over too much.
No, you're good.
Can we just give them a round of applause?